Hello, everyone. This is Alex Jabaley from the Jabodcast. I believe episode 11 now, or 10. I apologize. It's been a little while since I've recorded, just to catch you up in my life. We're mid-April now. CEO registration's been underway for a while. I got to announce the All Elite Wrestling Show we're doing at CEO 2019 with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes, which is really exciting. Been having a lot of real meetings with these guys. The New Japan show we did last year was amazing, but all that was pretty much me and the Tenno production and, you know, the FGC running everything. This year, AEW's been really helpful. I've been meeting with a lot of their guys and just, a lot of stuff that I had to handle last year. I have people helping me now, so it just feels like a much bigger show than it was last year. So really excited about that. I was just on vacation. Actually, working most of it in Korea. Went to Seoul, Korea for my first time, which was pretty amazing. But now I'm back. I'm actually currently driving to Daytona Beach right now. I have two guests with me today. They came into Orlando last night. We caught up. First guest is Evan Mao from Gaming Generations. If you follow my podcast, you follow the FGC, if you go to a lot of the major events, Evo, Combo Breaker, CEO, here they are the guys that set up every PlayStation, Switch, do the updates, pretty much all the hardest work going into an event in terms of the equipment that you needed to run. Evan, I want you to introduce yourself, tell people where you're from and all that, and why the hell are you here?
Hey, everybody. Evan Mao. Extremely excited to be on this podcast today with Alex. We are on our way to Daytona to do some scouting for the venue for upcoming CEO 2019, and there's a lot of things going on right now. We are also doing a Pokemon event this weekend, and two other shows actually as well, so we've been kind of falling behind. We've averaged probably anywhere from 4 to 8 shows a month now. We started years back in 2010 in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and
that's where La Crosse the sport was created, right?
Yep.
Really?
No. Well, they like to say there's statues around, and they like to say it's where it was started, but I doubt it.
Nice.
And, you know, Alex and I, we met around that time, 2010. We did some events locally called Focus Fire. And we were trying to push and do some next level production, and we were streaming on, I believe it was Justin TV and live and live stream back then.
And you had Pepsi as a sponsor. I remember noticing that. Yeah.
It was a local Pepsi.
Still Pepsi.
Yeah, they're a really big family in the area that runs a Pepsi there. So we did a big event where we did 10,000 in cash prizes across, I think it was 6 or 7 different games over the winter.
And back then, that was a lot.
2010, yeah, that was a big prize pot bonus. Now that seems very minimal. Players don't even travel sometimes for $10,000 anymore. And Alex, that's when he was starting to get way more in the scene. And I believe CEO was born in 2010.
Officially, actually, yeah. Officially. I did a lot of locals leading up to that, but yeah. Yeah, and then the first time, we'll talk about first. So that's a little intro to Evan, and he's a very modest guy, unlike me. And he's been working with a lot of major events. He actually, I'll get into what you do for CEO as well outside of the event itself. But also, I have a good friend of mine. He's also a huge wrestling mark who has actually worked behind the scenes. He did camera work for CEO last year. First time I met you, I think, was also like 2012, maybe UFGT. Say hello to Mike Bison. That is his real name.
That is my real name. So last name is B as in boy, I-S-S-O-N. So I got a lot of grief growing up. Everybody called me M. Bison, but I was a Sagat player. So that was a rough scar on my history.
And he looks like Rufus.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I met Jabaley. We met back, it was UFGT 8. That was 2012, I believe.
That was the first time I'd gone to.
I think it was 2011.
2011?
If I recall correctly.
Possibly. But that was quite a while ago. I was out there originally. So funny enough, like with all of us being in the car, Evan from Gaming Gen, we met in 2010 doing, there was a Power Up, which was back then an Evo qualifier.
And who ran that again? That was Nathan.
That was Nathan Shields.
Shields ran that.
I went to that event, had a good time.
And he was really big into the scene.
Oh, yeah.
Even years prior to that, he was doing a lot of events.
And that event was in an arcade, and I think he couldn't keep up with the growth, and he kind of fell out of it and just didn't want to do it anymore. The event was amazing.
Well, that was back when, FGC events really didn't do very well.
Yeah, there was no sponsors or anything. No. If you couldn't bring in a crowd, you had a hard time sustaining. But that was actually one of the most... I love going to events that have, like, an arcade nearby, and you just play fighting games nonstop. And that's before my stressful days of running everything. But yeah, Mike, so, you know, we met through that, and then we kind of instantly bonded, right?
Yeah, it was interesting to me because you kind of gave me the, you know, basically the, like, the Jabali pitch of what CEO was going to be. You told me it was crossover with wrestling. It was going to be more kind of like entertainment focused, player entrances, you know, all of these things you want to do. You really back then pushed Fighter Mania.
Oh,
which
yeah.
was, you know, kind of like the exhibition that Friday night, you know, before...
And your name was underrated. He went by Bill D. Hype.
Bill D. Hype. I still have the Twitter tag. I should probably reactivate that for other stuff. But yeah, that was...
And your fake mustache that kept falling off.
And the fake mustache, yeah. Jabali brought me. So that was me and a buddy of mine, Josh Engel, who was a photographer for MLG at the time.
And those are some great... They did a lot of good, like, day one, day two recap videos.
Boss Fight TV.
Yeah, we had Boss Fight TV was our organization that we started up, because our thing is, like, me personally, I got started hosting LAN parties for shooter games like Unreal Tournament, Counter-Strike, things like that, but I, like, was just involved with kind of everything that was related to competitive gaming back then.
And
so
you were a diehard MLG guy too, right?
Yeah, I was a pretty diehard MLG guy. Halo, and you
guys knew
Starcraft.
Ninja before.
Plenty of nights with Ninja going out when he I hope he was 21.
I recall him being that was when Gangnam Style was really popular, so
2012.
Somebody out there could figure out the math, you know. Yeah. How old is Ninja now, and when was Gangnam Style popular?
Yeah.
So but Jabali, you know, basically through Evan brought on the Boss Fight crew to come out and do more events. We were doing, like, media coverage and interviews with players at the venue, and, you know, basically producing all this content, and Evan saw what we were doing and brought us on to more events, and surrogately through that, Evan bring us on to UFGT brought us to Jabali.
Let's not forget about Divekick.
Oh yeah, and
let's not forget about Divekick.
That's true.
Shout out to Keats.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, it was just kind of this, like,
remember your promo video for that, Mike? You guys did a promo video for Divekick.
Oh, yeah, we did a promo video, and that was the first time. So YouTube used to have this glitch back in the day where if a video exceeded, like, over 1,000 views,
it was like
303, 312, something like that. And I remember that was that Divekick video we did. We did a hype video that didn't show any gameplay. It was literally just people playing the game. And that was our first, like, 303 era where we're like, oh my God, is this going to have, like, 1,000 views, 2,000 views?
A million?
And it ended up at, like, what, 304 when the glitch hit?
It was like just barely, just a little over. So,
I was the first one to play that too. UFGT, the hype. Keats,
I think that had over 20,000 viewers within the first day.
I think so. Yeah, because there was a lot of rumors around.
You know what's
crazy,
man? 2012, when I was working with Boss Logic from Australia, he made CEO, like, launch trailers that had, like, just all the top players for Street Fighter coming.
Yeah.
Back when you only knew the top players from, like, two or three games.
Yeah.
Now every community is just getting bigger and bigger, and he would make these videos, and we would get, like, 50,000 views on a trailer. I can't even break, like, 5,000 with, like, the best production ever. Like, they just gone down, and, you know, people pretty much make up their mind if they're going to go on events and stuff. But you did the video stuff, which was great. You know, I wish we could do it again, but Josh kind of went back to focusing on his own personal stuff, what he wanted to, which he did, like, drag race videos and stuff, right?
Yeah, he got really into like drifting, like car racing and drifting, and he still does photography. He does he has his own blog. I think it's The Raging Hop, where he does, like, beer reviews and stuff like that. So,
you know, do you wish you would have stuck with it? Because with how popular gaming is now, as opposed to when you guys, I feel like you were quite a bit ahead of your time.
I think,
we definitely were with Fighter Mania.
That's definitely one of the best pieces of feedback that we've ever received is, you know, we were ahead of our time, and, you know, we were doing things a lot of other, like, for instance, like, Spooky, like, Team Spooky loved us because we were shooting guerrilla style. So if we did an interview, it was up on YouTube within 10 minutes, and we would give the file to Spooky or whoever was streaming,
stream.
And they could play it on stream when they had downtime. So
interviews, you know, doing all kinds of
I think the
stuff.
Biggest thing for me is, like, you know, Josh and I are really good friends. We did a lot of cool stuff, but it's like the reason we did Boss Fight was because we were pursuing our passion. Kind of like how, you know, Jabali has CEO, Evan has Gaming Gen. Like, we just loved gaming and we loved being at events. And so, you know, being able to kind of transition, you know, the same thing, you know, Jabali's doing with wrestling. I love wrestling as well. Like, you know, pursue every passion you have to the fullest.
Maybe someday you can relaunch.
We'll have a 10-year reunion, yeah.
Well, this is technically the 10th year of CEO. Next year's the reunion because the years confuse everybody. So yeah, so back to Evan. So before gaming gen kind of took off and you had Focus Fire and stuff, you own like used game stores that did a lot of like repairs and stuff, right? In Wisconsin?
That's how I started in 2006. I was still in college. I was just turned 22. I ended up taking over a game store that was not doing the greatest. I'll never forget the owner when I first walked in was smoking a cigarette behind the counter and eating a bucket of fried chicken. Usually he was wearing a shirt, not always.
Really?
Yeah, he was, and he had a thick New York accent. And it was literally the only game store in La Crosse, Wisconsin, a town of about 50,000 people, aside from GameStop, that I'd ever seen there. You know, we just didn't really have many used mom-and-pop style game stores, just pawn shops. There's a couple of them in town. And, you know, growing up, it kind of stunk having to pay full price for, you know, go to GameStop and pay higher pricing for the games. But so I remember going in there and thinking, oh, it's so cool. There's a store finally in La Crosse that, you know, outside of GameStop or, you know, pawn shops that I can go into and buy games at. And I ended up, I was buying broken systems from the guy, and I would fix them and I would resell them online. Or I would just fix them for him and he could resell them in his store. And I started working there and helping out, and the guy ended up getting in a fisticuff fight with a police officer in his store about 3 months after I had met him.
So what's in the water in Wisconsin?
He was in jail for about a week, and I was literally the only hope he had to open the doors to his store. And somehow he got out of it because he claimed self-defense because the cops started it, apparently. And they went over like a glass case, and it was a crazy fight, apparently. But somehow he was able to figure out that the cop, like, started the fight. So
yep.
He came out of jail and came back to the store. And then he, the following month, I believe, he cheated on his wife. He wasn't from there. He was from...
This is a gaming podcast, sir. No, just kidding.
Cheated on his wife, and, you know, I'm not even sure how the guy even got a girl, if you would have seen him. But then his wife basically gave him the ultimatum, either you come home and, you know, get out of La Crosse or we're getting divorced. And then he came to me and said, you know, Evan, I'm trying to sell my store. And I figured you'd be the first one I'd come to because you seem like a good guy that's going to keep it going. And gave me a pretty decent offer, and I took it. And
nice.
That's how Gaming Gen was born.
So welcome to Business Tips 101. If you have a boss who's having a very bad day, just call the cops on them. Let them come in, do their work, and then, man, you might own that business in a week.
He'll give you a great deal when he tries to get out of it. So I feel really lucky. I literally had no idea what I wanted to do in life. I had no clue that I was going to be running a used game store. Never once did I ever
even think about it. And you own multiple stores,
right? Yeah, and we've now, we're up to 5 locations right now, and I've had a couple of franchises. Those didn't work out so well. It's not as easy to run a franchise as you think, especially in the gaming industry. Once people figure out how to do things, it's tough to like motivate them to stick as a gaming generation. So I lost a couple of stores over the years to people that, you know, just didn't want to be a part of the franchise. And, you know, franchises back in the day, as everyone knows, were kind of becoming pretty popular, 2005 through 2015.
Yeah.
There was like your playing trades, and there was, you know, other chains that were starting to try to open up. And that was the heyday, I think, of trying to make money in the used game world. And that really has taken a toll in the past 3-4 years. So
let's talk about how we first met with all of us, right? Our interactions, at least. From what I remember, it was Evo, I think, 2012 or 11. And back then I was helping out with like setup, teardown, just hanging out with everybody. And I think that's when you had all your Asus monitors, the Evo monitors back in the day. And we were just packing them up, and I was like learning from Dave was there at the time, I believe. And he was like just stacking the monitors on top. Like, that's how you guys pack these things? Like, I kept the big boxes, but you guys just knew what you were doing in terms of tearing down, setting up. And I had never seen anything like that before, because the early COs, it was literally like me driving monitors myself, having my friends help me unpack them and stuff.
Multiple trips,
exactly. And you guys had a system, right? Tell me about like just getting into the FGC side of things. I know you've also done like Halo events and Madden events and all these different genres, but fighting games, right? Smash especially now. You're running all these different events in terms of equipment. Just how did you get started? And like, what was it like back then? What is it like now doing these events?
Oh, it was, you know, really, obviously back in the early 90s, you know, myself, I was really big into Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. And kind of faded away over the years. A lot of my friends started to switch over to different games, and, you know, Halo and other games. And so I kind of lost the passion to play fighting games a little bit over the years there. But then when Street Fighter 4 came out, I think for not only me, but a lot of people that used to play, it really brought the fire back. And so we ended up having the great idea to do a local tournament in 2009, where I believe Marn and Flo came in. That's when they were living in Chicago.
Yep.
And they came in to the event. We had about 150 players, or maybe it was even a little bit more. We had a lot of people from the Minneapolis scene come down to lacrosse, some from the Madison area, and a couple from the Chicago area. I think Big Marcus from Chicago?
Yeah.
I remember him. Really big. He was a good Bison player. But, you know, Marn and Flo are on that, like, that another level.
Wireless, yep. And before Flo started streaming
we had
daily.
And Martin and Flo will remember this, but we had a briefcase. It was a clear briefcase, and I think we were doing like a $5,000, or maybe it was like $2,500 like pot bonus for first place, and we put all the money in, a bunch of I think it was like tens, and lined the entire briefcase full of money. And we had it on the main stage sitting there. And all kinds of people were like getting pictures by it and stuff. And I want to say that I think Flo. Gosh, I don't remember if it was Marner Flo that won. But they always, whenever I see them, they're like, "Oh man, that briefcase was so cool."
Yeah.
So happy to win that. And so that's how we kind of started with, you know, Street Fighter. We did a lot of local tournaments then, and you know, that kind of led us into doing bigger events, because we had a big Call of Duty scene back then. We had a pretty big Halo scene back then still as well. Street Fighter was really, you know, getting people interested in fighting games again, or new people that had never played them in it. And we did a couple of local events at our Civic Center. And the first show we did, we had around 800 to 1,000 people attend. The second show, which was the December 2010 show, we had probably around 1,200. That was when we had a massive snowstorm on Thursday night. Our show started on Saturday. It was a two-day event. So if you weren't in to lacrosse on Thursday night, all the interstates were shut down. All flights were canceled. Nobody could make it in Friday or Saturday because it had snowed probably about 2 feet in those couple days. So it wasn't what we expected. We lost a ton. Okay, anyone that runs an event, I think when you first start, you never make money.
Yep.
Your first year, at least back then. It was all about the
passion.
Especially
if you use Gaming Gen for equipment, because they overcharge. It's a joke.
I won't even comment on that. Yeah. And, you know, talking about money and equipment, and I guess I will elaborate on that. Nobody was doing that, really. And that's kind of how we got linked up with, you know, like Joey from Evo. And actually, it was Kaneda, who I first met from Evo, that got us linked in with them.
He used to run NCR.
Yep. And that was at UFGT. Missed that guy. He was a great guy. You know, Alex, Nathan,
yep.
You know, Rick, he worked on Thayer, the Hadou on Twitter. He runs the Tekken Pro Tour for Twitch. We started working together for the very first Focus Fire event. That was at the Lacrosse Center. He was a clever designer and also just a good businessman around my age as well. But, you know, everyone needed equipment back in the day. And that's kind of, you know, you kind of create these friendships with people that ran other events. And they're like, hey, you know, we could use, you know, 20 PS3s and some Xbox 360s, and, you know, you got, you know, we had around probably 70 or 80 monitors at that time, and, you know, we had just purchased things throughout the year, the last couple years, to try to build up our inventory for our bigger shows. So, you know, back then it was, hey, we'll cover your travel and, you know, we'll get you guys a hotel room, you know, one hotel room for your five guys. And, you know, we'd go out and we'd set up and we'd have fun. And we started to run a merchandise booth for just ourselves. And it was very small. And
if you ever go to an event and you see them there, they're going to have every plushie and wallet and hat known to man from gaming.
If you're a gamer now and you walk by our booth, you know, we try to have a little bit of everything there. So whether you're into Pokemon or you're into Mario or Zelda or, you know, any kind of popular series, Naruto, Dragon Ball, you know, we try to have a little bit of everything at our booth. And, you know, we've expanded from doing very small one-table booths to doing the Evo last year. I think we ran a 30-foot by 60-foot booth, just full of...
And there was a line nonstop.
The line never quits at some of these shows. So, and, you know, going into more of these shows and how they kind of operate and run, you know, really, Alex and Mike, they used to be just tournaments. It was all about just fighting games. Yep. You know, you didn't really have any booths there. It was just a come in and play and, you know, get your bragging rights. Heck, there was no pop bonuses back then even. I mean, people would lose money to fly in to these events to try to win for bragging rights.
Back when it was about passion, now there's still passion, but if you don't have money, a lot of people just fly into the money or go to. But speaking on that, like, it just, the reason why, you know, for me, I'm successful, Mike's successful, Evan's successful in this space is because we just kept doing it. We weren't making money in the early days. We were just getting our names out there. Now,
it was never about the money.
Yeah, and now, like,
for anybody,
we're naturally making the money that we you know, we think we deserve. Probably a little less than we do deserve, to be honest with you. But, like, now we just have the market, right? We do everything FGC. Now when you have all these new events coming, like, I get emails every week, like, hey, I want to do a really big event. What advice could you give us? And I'm always like...
Casinos or... Yeah,
big, casinos. Big I remember, we started talking to a bunch last year together, and just nothing came of them, because a lot of them didn't know that you got to build something first for the community.
Well, a lot of them, they see, you know, pictures of the Staples Center sold out for doing a League of Legends event, or they, you know, see, or maybe even attend an event like Evo, and, you know, companies like Wizard World and bigger companies, they go into these shows and they're like, gosh, you know, all these people are here just for gaming, you know, like, we want a show like this because it attracts that demographic that's hard to get in touch with, you know, people aged 15 to 35, and, you know, they just want to try to do something big with it, and they think that they can get there overnight or by, you know, throwing down big pop bonuses. And I think, you know, we kind of learned that years ago about pop bonuses really don't mean a ton to get players to show up, maybe a couple of the pros, but, like, when you were doing an event, I think, wasn't there that arcade out in California doing an event the same weekend as you?
It was like Revelations.
Like a $15,000 pop bonus.
Diego that year and stuff.
Yep.
It got a good turnout for just like Street Fighter, but...
Who had more people, though, for Street Fighter at the event?
I did, by far.
By far. So. And that was when you pretty much first started, but your event was on the map.
Yeah, and back then it was like a huge competition, like, who's going to have more people? But, you know, the organizers would talk between each other, like, so sorry, there's nothing we can do to change it, because there really isn't. Especially in these days, like, there's just so many events, they're going to overlap. But people don't understand, when you're signing these contracts, that's probably the only weekend you're going to find at a venue that's good enough for your event. So it's like, you're just stuck across doing something, so you just got to do your best to kind of, like, I'm always the end of June, because nobody else is at the end of June, and they know that, because CO is, you know, second largest event, they're not going to try to do something that same weekend anymore. But back then, it was like everyone was establishing their dates, and back then, besides that Revelations, which was like the second week of June that year, there was no other FGC events in June.
Yeah.
Now there's a bunch, and now with Evo going to August, early August for this year and last year, you know, a lot of people are like, hey, let's move to July now, it's wide open, you know, so you got to be careful of that.
Well, and a lot of times when, you know, that's one of the good things with us, you know, being linked with all these different events, is we can kind of let people know, you know, hey, that's not a great weekend to run your event, because you have these other things going on that same weekend. And, you know, if you want to have any success in this industry, you know, pick a different date, because you don't want to run your event on like CEO or Evo or Combo Breaker or any other like major Smash event weekend. And not to mention, like, you want to try to like be able to not saturate it too much. So it's like, hey, there's really nothing in April. Maybe do April or do March or, you know. But I think everyone is stuck on, and that's why, Alex, you know, you're lucky that you've been doing this for as long as you have, because you've made your event like the staple of June. But you know, everyone wants to run their event during the summer months, right? Because that's
you know, and a little, not secret, but just like the reason why Combo Breaker, CO Evo are as big as they are is because they're in the summertime. And a lot of events that are like CO Tagus in September, I don't ever get the numbers of a summer event, but I'm realistic about it,
people
right?
People are just available.
Yeah, exactly. So people, you know, if you start a term on Friday in the middle of the, you know, beginning of the year, it's just hard for them to go. So it's definitely like changed the landscape. Just there's so many events. So back to you, Mike, in the back seat. We first met. Do you remember like our first actual interaction?
I remember our first interaction as such. We met at U of GT. You started chatting with us. You were telling me about CEO, and we filmed pretty much on the spot. There was a promotional video that
the
we
Mark
helped
Mann
make.
One?
Yeah, it was you and Mark Mann, where basically it was you cutting a promo like you were like Hulk Hogan from NWO back in the WCW
Hollywood
days. Yeah, Hollywood Jubailey. And Mark Mann, who was sick at the time, like incredibly sick, but like he like got enough of his voice out to basically laugh like the Million Dollar Man.
Yeah.
And yeah, we like literally cut that video on the spot, and then throughout the rest of the weekend we just kind of kept chatting, and then you gave an offer basically to Josh and I to fly out. And really, we had no obligations that first year of CEO, because you were just like, hey, come out and do your thing, which was awesome.
Yeah.
It was like such an opportunity to do a bigger event and to just kind of grow and do our thing. And since then, we had just, you know, year after year after year, done more and more.
Do you remember the debated prank I would do with the elevator at U of GT that year?
Oh, man.
Do you remember that?
I do not.
So I don't know if you were actually there. So I had like the raffle. I was like the raffle god back in the day.
Yeah.
I had like three sticks, but I didn't want to take the boxes home. So I emptied the boxes, put the sticks in my luggage or whatever, and I would go and I would leave a stick box in the elevator, and I'd come out the end like, dude, somebody left their stick box behind. And like six people would run in to get the box to go, dude, there's a stick. And they all like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
and you just hear me laughing down the hallway.
Nothing in there.
And then they would get in on the joke on the next person to come out the elevator and stuff.
Yeah.
Or I would walk with these empty bombs, like, dude, does anybody want to buy this for like $20? I don't have room to take it back. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah. And I would just throw the box
at them.
Like, what the hell? It was empty.
Speaking of the debated, and I'm sure you've talked about this in other podcasts, but I guess I've never really heard the true story on, first off, how did that get started? How did you think of that?
I believe it was Stan. It was FGC event. This is actually Manny. So Manny Camacho, the guy who canceled the event that CEO basically replaced.
2010.
Right. And for the record, people were like, you picked up another event. I'm like, no, I didn't. That event had never even happened a year before. So I still started from scratch. I just ended up having to find a new venue and kind of pick up the pieces and stuff.
Started from scratch.
Exactly, yeah. The original debate was I was always playing and I was competing back then. I was winning Street Fighter 4 tournaments. I was like getting like top 5 in Tekken tournaments, Tekken 4 or 5 at the time. And one of my buddies, I was like beating somebody. He's like, you just barely won. And he was throwing JE in front of everything. And I think Manny said the word like debated first. It was at a local Will's Pub event. And I'm like, debated, huh? But nothing really came of it. And then I started saying it myself when I would put an empty button on my stick with Balrog, charge a move and go forward and hit the empty button. But people would think I was doing a dash punch and I was baiting them out basically. And that's where debated kind of got born. As for the first picture, it was at CO2010.
Was it something that just kind of happened?
The picture
was
standing like Macho Man randomly with a microphone, like just doing a flex pose, that somebody just took a picture, post online. Then somebody goes, wait a minute. They put Macho Man right next to it. And then like, it looked exactly alike. And then Boss Logic's put them together, put a beard and sunglasses on me. And that was the original debated picture. Now back then, when people typed debated on Justin TV and Twitch, the only time it would be typed is when I entered a room. I watched a lot of streams back then. When I would enter a room, like, Jabali's here, and they would type the Jabated face. That was it. 2016, another picture was taken. you know, the story goes, Twitch emailed me going, hey, we need to update all these Twitch emoticons, the global ones for 4K and tablets. Do you have a higher res of that picture? I'm like, I can't find one. I'll ask Boss Logic. He deleted the original files. Then I'm like, Rick, we need to do a new picture. Rick from Combo Breaker. And then we just went looking through all these CO pictures. I'm like, what's my face that'll be recognizable? And that's where I had a picture of Robert Paul took of me while I was watching the Xavier Woods, Kenny Omega thing. And I was sitting there just smiling, watching them. And a video came out a year later of me just reacting to the match. I'm like, yeah, I did this shit. Like, I pulled this off. And that's where the face got, you know, Rick cleaned it up a bit, put a little shine on my forehead, and then boom. The first time Jebaited blew up is when League of Legends Worlds had 400,000 viewers, and somebody did like a Now We Jebaited copypasta, and it just blew up.
And I knew Jebaited. Well, I do follow Twitch a little bit, and you know, not as much as my 13-year-old son.
But yeah, Evan has two kids and a wife, so he's busy outside of events and stuff.
And I'll never forget, about maybe 2 months ago, I forgot what I was doing in my son's room, but he was going to bed, and I did something, and he said, "You've been jebaited, Dad," and I said, "Jebaited, huh?"
You like texted me like you corrupted my son.
Yeah, I was like,
son.
Where have you heard that? And he's like, "Oh, it's all over Twitch," and he's like, "You know, my friends and I talk about it in school." I couldn't believe it, and so it was, yeah, definitely. I texted Jebaited and was like, "You son of a gun."
yeah, I still get that a lot.
But that's that, and like my son and all of his friends, that's what they say now. You know, they try to do something to somebody, and you know, "You've been jebaited." So.
Nice.
It's pretty funny.
I'm just used to it now. I don't even think about it anymore. But
have you patented that yet?
Yeah, it's been in trademark limbo like a year. It takes like 14 months to get approval on these things. But I'm not too worried about it, because who's going to steal it from me when my last name's Jabali? So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, not like it prints money or anything yet. We'll see. But
It'd be funny if you ran into another Jebaily.
I have cousins and all, but
aside
go
from
by
like
their
your
last
family,
name.
Like, yeah, just
yeah.
Randomly at
an
event.
I'm
like,
waiting
hey,
for like
another Jebaily
a distant cousin I've never met to just like trademark it, start making like millions of dollars off of it. I'm like, I'm the real Jebaily. I'm like, what? And his name's like Alex 2 in Another World or something. Anyways, so back to events. Like, so what we haven't talked about is like, besides equipment now, like my early days as CEO, I was the one ordering the badges, right? I was placing the orders. I was having Rick, basically, or my buddy Gareth. Own apparel, yeah. Ordering a couple shirts. I would do it myself, ship it to my house, pay for them. Evan now, like, not only just for CEO, Conbreaker, Evo, does like Pokemon events. He prints, uses his print companies to do like tablecloths, badges, banners, everything under the sun. It makes my life so much easier, and that's the like the unsung hero of what Evan actually really does behind the scenes leading up to events. And he's like, hey, we got a deadline to print this, you know, or like if we're past the deadline, he's like, let me work my contacts to overnight it to you. And somehow we've only ever had like one shipping slip up with lanyards 1 year at CEO. Yeah,
and we still got them on Saturday.
Yeah, we still got them. And I went all around myself with like three staff and just hand them one by one to everybody I could. And then I started like chucking stacks of them to people.
Well, it's so hard to find reliable companies and, you know, people to work with. There's a gazillion of them on the internet, yep. You know, to work with, and you never really know the quality. You never know if you're going to get them on time. You know, it's a frustrating process. But you know, what we did was, you know, companies that we were working with for a couple of key shows, and we were starting to order some of those things. Like, we just kind of started letting people know, like, hey, if you need this stuff, and you know, it. To no surprise, everyone's like, yeah, you know, definitely could use help on this stuff. And everybody's ordering things last minute. That's just kind of how the industry works in esports and I think live events in general. And so,
order stuff early, guys, because when you pay for that rush and the extra shipping, you're just basically blowing $2,000-$3,000.
Yeah, well, when you order stuff, you know, 6 days before your event, and it's especially if it's coming from overseas. I think we're all guilty of that, and we still are. You know, it's tough though to get everything together. You know, you're waiting for sponsor logos.
That's the biggest thing, honestly, is the sponsors coming in last second usually,
and,
yeah.
You know, everybody wants to be in your signage and on your badges and on your shirts, and, you know, they want to be on your pop-up banners around the venue, and it's like, you know, a lot of times you're waiting for them, and that's what kind of makes you not be able to put orders in until the very end. So, but yeah, the more that we order and the more events that come in and work with us, we kind of combine forces, all these events together. And they allow us to order in, you know, and spend more money with these bigger companies that we work with. And when we need favors, you know, that's something that they can do for us. So, you know, hey, we got 24 hours to do, you know, 2,000 badges, we can get those, that kind of stuff done. You know, it, I've learned in business over the years, you know, the more you can order, the more companies will appreciate your business and they'll take care of you. And they'll also put you on better price tiers. So you're no longer paying a dollar for these items, you're paying 50 cents, you know, because instead of doing, you know, only 2,000 of those a year, you're doing, you know, 150,000 a year of quantity of those specific items. So you're able to get on like the bottom price tiers, and you know, you're ordering your price tiers, you know, you're up there with the biggest companies in the world that are ordering from the exact same companies that we're ordering from. So,
and we've had that, like there's been delays on shirts because like, NFL or something just did a bunch of jerseys through the same company.
It's like, sorry, like Super Bowl takes priority, but you know, you're also a big client, so we're gonna still try to squeeze you in. So it's been a fun kind of process over the last, you know, 5-6 years. And not to mention, let's face it, how much time do you have in your hands to handle all of that stuff?
Yeah.
When you're preparing for your show, you know, the last thing you want to think about 2 weeks prior is, oh, I need to get all this stuff done, produced, you know, making sure to check in the tracking numbers and everything's getting delivered on time. And, you know, you don't have time to do that kind of stuff. And, you know, so we've taken, I think, a big burden off people's shoulders by helping out with that kind of stuff. So, and also making the events look way better too.
Oh yeah.
And letting them know like, hey,
back then we had like 5 banners, now we're like at 50 to 100 each event.
80 foot by 20 foot banner, yeah, you're gonna pay $4,000 from someone in the States, but overseas we can get it done for about $1,500.
Yeah.
So, you know, making it affordable.
Somehow they ship faster than within America sometimes.
It's companies overseas, I learned, they really appreciate the business.
Yep.
And they will go above and beyond to make you happy. You know, so that's one of the things I will applaud working with companies overseas. You know, don't get me wrong, American companies are, you know, some of them are very similar.
Taking away our jobs. Thanks, Evan. No.
Well, it's tough because, you know, everyone in this industry is trying to save money.
Yep.
So, you know, yeah, unfortunately, we can't work with people in the States all the time.
Yeah, I mean, some guys, like, not to get too much in detail, like, sometimes a pop-up banner will be twice the price ordering it within America because they're just not making the volume
and
that these other companies are.
If you need 70 of them for your show or 50 or 20, or, you know, that really adds up.
Yep.
Every dollar counts.
And back then was rough because, like, I can't afford badges this expensive, you know. And now,
who could afford those?
And now it's just, it's ingrained in your event. You have to order a quality badge. Or, you know, some kind of just memorabilia, whether we do, like, the sunscreen we've done. We're able to always do creative stuff, too.
People cherish their badges and their, their custom lanyards. And
I actually organized my house with my girlfriend the other week, dude, and I had, like, literally 300 badges from events over the years. I just put them all in one bin, so if I ever want to go through, obviously all the lanyards are mixed
in,
up.
In my office, I have, like, all my my badges laid out, and I feel bad. I probably haven't collected half of the ones I should have at events, and you know, even ones we've done for you, I think I haven't.
I want to remember, was it Cyberpower custom CO lanyard? Because CO was one of the first events to ever do custom lanyards, right? We didn't just do
black
string ones.
I think you were the first one to, because Cyberpower came on as a big sponsor.
And Geico,
and we were
for
able
2 years.
Geico to afford to do a couple of more unique items like that. And that idea, I never went away. I guess everyone kind of, once you do it, it's kind of hard to go back.
Yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of us are still like holding in things we want to add to our events, because once you do them, there's no going back.
Well, that's a good thing, too. You know, as you're doing more custom branded items, it's nice upsells to companies like, hey, you can be the main sponsor on all 10,000 lanyards that get handed to each person coming into the show. And, you know, you're able to upsell those kind of things and make additional income on that, which is great.
And I mean, the early Evo years, they were giving away free t-shirts with every registration, but then that was just adding up.
People used to do that all the time.
Yeah. But now I've
free registration shirts,
and
SmashCon still does that, actually.
Oh, nice.
They're one of the few events that actually does
with a certain amount of registers, right? Or the early registration.
Yeah, the first, I think, month or two, they do a bunch of free shirts,
which is great, guys. Like, it gets people to register early and stuff, but again, it adds up, right? Stuff like that. And then you guys help us, like, we weren't doing custom badges back in the day. We were just doing simple badges with all the sponsor
standard
logos
badges,
and the event on the front.
Look, paper that you'd slip in a thing, or, like, you know, they'd be like this disgusting, huge lamination all around, you know, and they didn't look very pretty, but.
And now we do the custom, like, die cut medals, combo breaker and eye and stuff, and those are amazing.
The medals have really come a long way in the last couple of years, for sure. And you still see the medals that, you know, people just print a little sheet of paper and they slap it on the metal, but, you know, we're trying to do the custom die cut stuff. You know, things that people get and they're not going to just throw in a drawer, things that people get and they're like, they're going to walk around with it.
Yep.
And they're going to be wearing it and they're going to be proud of what they just won.
Yep.
And trophies too.
Oh yeah.
Trophies
yeah,
so. Back in the day.
See, now that I do these expensive ass belts, there's no going back.
The belt
sucks.
So nice.
So, which speaking of which, I need Rick to finish the logos. Thanks, Rick. No, anyways, he's off in France right now for the mix-up. Tekken tournament this year, this weekend. So I'm off until.
We actually did the signage for that event too.
Oh, did you really? Even European? So you have it shipped from your vendors over there?
Overseas, right? Nice. To France. So,
And you Dragon Ball. We had the Dragon Ball tour last year and you guys helped us print those custom tablecloths, which I still have a bunch in my garage.
Yep. And we shipped those to Australia, we shipped those to Paris, we shipped those to Mexico.
Did you do the Australia Pokemon Championship stuff or no?
No, they have their own.
Yep.
Thing over there. So working on that though with Chris Brown.
Nice.
Yep. Shout outs to Chris.
Chris, yeah, he's the one who hires me to do events in DC, Daniel Coke. So back to Mike, right? So Mike, the wrestling side of things. Last year you're actually one of the cameramen that helped out across the weekend. What was that like doing the wrestling event at a gaming event?
CEO 2018.
Yeah, that was insane because like being a wrestling fan, like it's cool, like CEO like is that perfect niche for myself, and I know like a lot more people that are like kind of realizing it's like you can mix the two worlds together. So you had me out, so Jabailey had me out working originally with Boss Fight, and we were just running around doing player interviews, basically producing content, to then working more.
Everything completely unscripted.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
On everything the spot. Just, like, yeah, oh my God, someone just won. Let's get up.
Yeah. Everything on the spot. But yeah, and then I worked more, you put me more on the role, like behind the scenes, working with production. I worked with Team Spooky several years in a row to be like the camera operator, because I was like one of the only guys that he would trust to let me touch his equipment at the time.
Yeah.
And so last year, I remember I was talking with you, and you hit me up a few months prior and you're like, are you available for CEO? And I was like, I mark it off of my calendar every year. I plan on making it out. And you're like, well, we have the New Japan Wrestling Show.
Did I tell you before I announced it?
I think you did, because you were kind of like logistically planning everything out. I know that you had told me beforehand who the wrestlers were going to be and who was involved, and we bounced back a couple ideas back and forth.
Yep.
And
You helped drive some home in my rental Jeep.
Yeah.
At the end of the night.
No, you gave me your keys and you...
Well, I couldn't drive technically.
Yeah, yeah. You gave me your keys and you're like, can you help drive the wrestlers to and from the venue? And I was like, absolutely, you got it. I worked last year. I was so every entrance that you saw at CEO, I was the camera operator for. Whether it was the wrestling show or top eight events, I did camera hopping for that.
Did you have a wire wrangler or no?
I did for the wrestling show, but I didn't for anything else.
Okay, yeah.
But that's one of those things. It's, you know, we were talking about it earlier. Like, you know, when you do things that you're just passionate about, you're going to make it work no matter what.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had one of the wrestling students actually from the local wrestling school was my cable wrangler for the wrestling show. And then on Saturday and Sunday, I just myself basically laid out my own cable preemptively so that way I could run up and down the ramp without snagging or tripping on anything.
Nice.
And then, we had talked about it before. You're like, do you have any experience, you know, doing wrestling? And I myself there's a local wrestling organization in Las Vegas called Future Stars Wrestling. I helped them start a Twitch channel, and there again, that was like, it wasn't like, okay, like I'll come in and you guys can give me money and we'll put this on Twitch and blah blah blah. It literally was just like, can I help start doing shows for you guys, you know, kind of pay your dues in the industry before you get bumped up. But yeah, you gave me that opportunity last year, and that was it was so surreal being in that moment, because, you know, interacting with all those guys, the wrestlers that, you know, I watch every week on TV, all the major pay-per-views and stuff, and, you know, you're literally right there thrusting the show was great. And you've given tons of people opportunities like that, you know, if you put in the work and kind of, you know, prove your worth, then you're going to get opportunities like that.
And that's really it, man, because a lot of people are like, hey, can I come work your event? Basically looking for a free flight, hotel, and a lot of money. And like, I like to hire people that literally step up, or like now a lot of people that are putting their heart and soul year round doing locals in Orlando and stuff. I want to give them opportunities to step up, and the experience they get from CEO helps their own events and stuff. So yeah, you definitely stepped up, dude. You're probably one of the only guys I trust in terms of like giving ideas back and forth that we actually execute and stuff. And you've been one to go to Japanese shows without me and get me shirts for me. So thank you, buddy.
You repaid the favor this year, though.
I know. I went to Wrestle Kingdom, Kenny's last match for New Japan show and stuff, and wrestled that, but bought some shirts for us and stuff. So yeah, that was cool. So yeah, it all goes hand in hand. But now you're in Vegas. You know, Evan's over in Wisconsin and stuff. And you know, you both flew in Orlando, picked you guys up. You drove. You flew separately. That's right.
Yeah.
So
yeah. You know, what we should talk about. We should talk about production.
And okay.
Team Spooky, Alex Valle.
Yep.
You know, doing events.
Level up.
Yep. Sorry. Level up. Yep. And you know, kind of how that all started. And you know, Mike, you made already a reference to Spooky.
Yeah.
You know.
And he did the second CEO. He's my big streamer for the second one, and he was awesome.
Who did your first CEO?
That was JT Barber, who does now the music for the entrances at CEO. So he's the one behind the the music player, basically.
Still a part of it.
Him and his girlfriend, they would go around getting the top eight players' music, then he would download them onto his computer, and then boom, be ready to go.
Which that in and of itself is like, that's a
very important job.
Job, but also like the logistics behind that. Of like getting with those players, getting the right songs, knowing the lineup, not getting sued. Like, yeah, that's huge. And that's one job. That's just one job behind the scenes.
And that stuff I was doing by myself at like the early CEOs before I started trusting me. Like, dude, I can't do this. But like CEO last year, obviously I had my Achilles heel surgery a week after the event, but I was injured with like a bum leg that literally was like dead weight. So I had a wheelchair, I had a full leg cast, you know, a boot and everything. I don't remember CEO last year because I was so on so many. I was on that doing that match I did, dude. Not many people know it's 2,000 milligrams of painkillers. Like, I should have been like in a bed, and I still did that. But like, I couldn't be around the entrances for the players on Sunday. I was like backstage or dealing with stuff or coordinating the wrestlers to get them back on their flights to go back to Japan.
Knowing how exhausting an event is to run, Alex, I am really surprised that you were able to do that. And I remember sitting there in the crowd watching you, thinking, is he crazy? You just totally had a horrendous injury that's going to take probably a year to heal.
I'm still not even
and
young.
Are,
nine
you
months
are
now.
Out there, what, less than a month after it happened?
No, a week later.
Was it a week
later? And I wasn't able to walk until Thursday, the day before the wrestling show.
Yeah, you know, just kind of one of those
things. You got to do what you got to do, man. I ain't no bitch. but, all right, we got 14 minutes left before this cuts off on the podcast. But yeah, dude, I mean, just you got to do what you got to do, man. You can't make any excuses. You got to lead by example. Again, everyone thought I was crazy the whole way. Like, how are you doing this? I'm like, I don't know. And then people, like, taking pictures, like, hovered over my wheelchair with me. And I'm just like, I look at the pictures, my eyes are just glazed over the whole weekend.
If people didn't have respect for you before that, I would hope that would at
least
show
people. Well,
if they've
been to an event, they have respect for anybody at the event.
How passionate you are about your show and about, you know, giving the people that are there, you know, showing them a good time and, you know, putting your body through that. That's not something
and now
that
a hardcore match this year, don't
anybody
ask.
That I know would do.
Well, I think the cool thing with that too is like as much as that, like nobody wants to see anybody get injured, but that was kind of a blessing in disguise because like everybody in the community sees Joe Bailey the personality.
Yeah.
They see this, you know, figurehead, but like that was a chance for a lot of people to see like how much other people really help run CEO.
Yeah.
Like you are the mastermind, but like when you're literally in a wheelchair delegating to other people.
I used to give out all the medals during the top eight. I couldn't do that this year and everyone stepped up and I was so proud of that and happy and I tried my best to give everyone as many thanks. You can't thank everyone, right? Face to face. But yeah, dude, I had to delegate. I had no choice in so many little things. You know, I had our friend Cynthia. She was like my assistant for the weekend, helping me get stuff.
Well, there's so many
pieces. Reminded me to take my painkillers.
For the event that really come together nicely. And, you know, I don't want to say that we're a big part of people's success. However, you know, having all your equipment set up and, you know, not having to worry about that and, you know, having a couple of key people on board to help kind of do things and, you know, the goal is, I think, you know, for you to be able to oversee the event from the outside in and not be stuck in the day-to-day stuff, you know, each day. There's so much going on. And, I mean, the team really last year just knocked it out of the park. All your volunteers did great.
Yep.
Speaking of volunteers, I'll never forget that, what was he, 10 years old? That ran a bracket 2 years ago.
Bubbles or something like that.
Come and fill in Bubbles. Shout out to Bubbles.
And then where else did he help at?
I think it was CEO 2016.
It was CEO 2016.
He was it Emo or somewhere else he helped first or no?
I think Astro did a shout out for him and it just blew up on Twitter.
Yep. And I let him do an entry. I remember Broza, a good friend of mine in Gainesville, he's just like, hey, can I let this kid do one of the intros? Like, dude, make his dreams come true. Go for it, of course. So, and that's the goal, right? Like, my goal is now, I've had a very fortunate life, dude. I've been all over the world thanks to what I do. DreamHack especially has taken me to, like, India, Sweden, all that stuff. And running events, all like, I don't just run Siona. I run, like, 7 major events a year now. Like, I actually think you guys, you know, provide for more events than anybody else. 10-0 Production does more streams than anybody else year round with his team, Segley and all them.
Used to be Team Spooky.
And Team Spooky. Yeah. Yep, Team Spooky's a part of that team. You know, Mike's traveled a lot too, especially with the Pokemon stuff you guys are doing. And then I'm actually like at the head directing all these events. So I don't get to play as much as I used to, but I have more fun now seeing other people have fun. Because, like, I'm 36 years old now. I'm still deadlifting 405. High five, buddy. You were there.
Good job.
Did that this morning. Thank you. It's exciting to see other people have fun, and so many people from Evo, CEO, Combo Breaker are now getting jobs in the industry.
Yeah,
because they start out just helping out of passion, and now they're getting paid.
Yeah.
So
and it's going back to kind of what I was saying about how these tournaments, or I should say events now, used to be just tournaments. However, now they are almost like it's an experience. It's almost like your convention style, there's esports here, but there's also tons of awesome vendors here. Come in to watch some high-level play, also hop in some games, sit down next to a pro, play with a pro, play with friends, go to the arcade room, buy stuff from, one of the how many artist alley tables you have this year? 100?
Fancy, I had like 80 applicants, but I have like 35
okay,
this
35,
year.
Okay.
Evo, I think, did 60 last year. Rick does like 20 because he doesn't have more space to do more.
You're sold out on booth space. Combo Breaker sold out on booth space. Evo always, sold out on booth space. These higher quality HTC events and Smash events. It's truly, like Alex said, it's all about the experience now. And a lot of these players, they have, like everybody, they have a budget to work with for the year. And, they kind of have to pick and choose. There's so many great events going on nowadays. What do I do? And that's where, CEO surpassed a lot of these events, is because you have that wrestling theme too. You have your event, it has a great personality.
Yep.
And it isn't just a tournament anymore. It's for a lot of different things. And I truly believe that events that have themes, they do a lot better. SmashCon, more the Nintendo theme. Combo Breaker, more of like the hard rock kind of concert style kind of theme. Obviously DreamHack with
the music festival.
And that's kind of how you really need to start doing shows nowadays if you want to really get the people to show up. They can't just be, hey, we're doing a Halo tournament this weekend, or we're doing a Street Fighter V tournament. That's great. That's good for locals. But you can never really expect your show to be anything big, I think, if you run it that way still.
Yep.
That's how you started, though. That's how you started with the smaller.
We don't really talk about it much, but, CO wouldn't have been a thing if I wasn't a competitor myself, winning tournaments to use that money to put back into the events. Now, obviously, it's just trusting people is what's made CO bigger. And then having these,
how many times did you think that you were not making any money doing this, and that maybe it's time to do something else?
I still think about it all the time. Like, I could probably stop running CEO, get a full-time job with a career, and
make more than you're making.
Make more
right
money,
now.
Stress less, have actual vacations where nobody bothers me, clock out at 6 p.m., go home, and nobody bothers me. But
not
CEO's
have to,
like,
be on Twitter 24/7.
But I get to stay at home, I get to travel when I want. So there's, checks and balances and just different reasons to do stuff. I want to change it for the world now, right? And DreamHack pays me. I have a full-time salary from DreamHack. their insurance helped cover my surgery last year. Thank you. I paid my dues for 8 years, and now I'm reaping the benefits of doing that. But of course, I could do something simpler and be happy and just, that. But I like to be the big shot. I like to run stuff. I like to give other people opportunities. And we don't really talk about, it's being a braggart in a way, but having these wrestling companies trust me with their brand is a big freaking deal.
Oh, yeah.
And it stinks because, like, AEW this year, and I still read all the websites. I notice everything. I see feedback, whether people hate me or love me. But the haters, I just block them now, really. It's great. Great little button. But what you call, like, the AEW, way bigger than me already with their following and stuff. They're promoting the hell out of this event. New Japan being a Japanese company, they're a lot more hands-off. But it's just great that I'm getting more promotion from the other community I'm trying to blend with, more so than my own damn FGC now. Like, what's going on, guys? But, you know, when you're at the top, you know, so to speak, around that, like, top three events, people already know you're good. They trust your event and your quality. They don't need to talk about it anymore.
Well, and they see the growth potential with the event and how, you know, gaming is becoming that new entertainment. And, you know, the companies like AEW, they're trying to do the same thing. They're the new source of entertainment for in the wrestling world.
Yep.
And, you know, for them, yeah, like you said, to put all their trust in you, that's a pretty big thing. You know that you've made it when you're getting those kind of companies' trust, the people behind that company especially.
And those are million-dollar industries too, man. Like million-dollar events they run all the time. Yeah, billion, if
industry,
not that.
Yeah, like if you add everything up, so...
But it's fun. I like the challenge of doing new things, man, because I'll get bored. Like, seriously, if I don't have a challenge, like, last year I was like, you know what? It'd be great. If I can run an event on one leg, think of what else I could do with two this year. No, anyways.
Well, and Mohawk, you know, with what you do for a living, I mean, you're not really working, obviously, like, a day job. Behind the desk, you're out and about, you're, you know, kind of a freelance.
Yeah, I've been just freelancing full-time for the past few years, and that's provided me the opportunity to kind of pick and choose the events and companies I want to work with, which is, you know, it's super stressful because you don't have constant income, and like I pay for my own health insurance, like I wouldn't have DreamHack to cover me if I had an incident or something. But yeah, it's great because now the industry has grown up so much to the point where it is, I can go work with this company, or I'm open that weekend and I can do this, and you know,
You're not making $100 a day anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Or doing things for free.
Yeah, it's not just like, we'll give you a flight and you can sleep on the floor of said hotel room.
With eight people in there.
Yeah.
So, very cool. Well, we're actually at our destination. I'm going to show these guys one Daytona, brand new plaza to the left here.
Nice.
We'll figure out barbecue or food. But, so before we go off, you actually just changed your Twitter name. I think Joey helped you out with a connection. What was it before? It was like gaming_gen.
Yeah, and I can't talk about that much, but our Twitter name is now Gaming Gen. It's not, there's no underscore in there anymore.
Awesome, yeah. You know, I have Jabali. I'm thinking of switching CEO Jabali to just Jabali. Just become the next Tiesto or something. But then, Mike, what's yours on Twitter?
Yeah, so mine's at the Mohawk Mike.
Yeah, and because he likes to have mohawks right now, his hair is down.
I've had a mohawk since I was 9 years old, and it's just one of those things. I wasn't trying to create a brand or anything, but I had a friend in middle school who called me Mohawk Mike. Because there's so many mics in the world, and so that's it just stuck, man.
Awesome. Any last thing? Real quick, just speed round, right? What's your favorite fighting game, Evan?
You know, I'm a huge Turbo guy, Street Fighter 2 Turbo. Okay. I whenever I play fighting games, I usually go back to that one.
Bison?
I got to go Tekken Tag Tournament 1. That's the game that really made me lab up.
You were Ogre games. Team, weren't you?
Yeah, I played Eddie and Paul.
Oh, even worse. Eddie, dude, in Tekken 3. I remember I had a high school sweetheart. Yeah. We went to the mall, and she was better than me at Tekken 3, just mashing out Christie combos and stuff. I'm like, God dang it.
What's yours, Alex?
Capcom vs. SNK2, because I probably wouldn't be driving you guys right now, and we wouldn't have connected if it wasn't for that game. That was my major. I played Mortal Kombat, 1, 2, 3, nonstop in the arcades and all that stuff.
That's a great game, too.
That was my entrance into the actual FGC and stuff. That for sure. What else? So, what's the hardest thing about an event? What's the easiest thing that you do, Evan? Like, what's the biggest thing that stresses you out every year? Just the deadlines, right?
The hardest thing is deadlines and not having much time to set up.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
What about you, Mike? What do you love the most and hate the most?
I would say I love the most. It feels like events now are like a family reunion, getting to see all the friends that you've, you know, made over the years, and new people, too, that are coming out to the event. Hardest thing is usually it's set up and tear down. Because the events have gotten so large, having enough time to prep and set up and tear down.
I like tear down. That's like lethargic for me now. It's therapeutic. Well, cool, Evan. Thank you so much, dude. Have fun. Good luck this weekend, and then we'll start placing CEO orders soon. Mike, we'll be talking more wrestling stuff once I figure out the production side. But guys, so Jabali here. Thanks to Evan and Mike for being on this. That actually made the drive go perfectly well. very fast. So I'm going to try to do another one very soon with Tong Lee, talk about our Korea trip, talk about Tampa Never Sleeps and everything he does. But yeah, again, I'm going to try. I always say be more consistent, but things just are hectic, man. It's really hard to get these done. But please let me know through Twitter, COJBailey, like how I can make these better for you, what else we can talk about. But yeah, thank you guys, everyone, for listening to this podcast about just putting events together, gaming generations, production, stuff like that. So stay tuned till next time. Take care.